Welcome everybody to Moms Who Do It. I'm Ari and I'm here tonight with Natalie. Natalie is a teacher and a mom of two kids, and she is also a cancer survivor. And we're so excited to have Natalie here tonight because she has a lot of really important things, wisdom and life experience to share with us. Her story was recently featured on the Today Show because it's a very important story, and we're so thrilled to have you here with us tonight, Natalie. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to start off by just, if you could share a little bit of background and, you know, kind of how your journey started when you were, I think, during pregnancy and then postpartum, and when you kind of realized things were not completely normal, I guess.
Yeah, no problem. So I was pregnant with my second child, and in 2020, I was in my third trimester of my pregnancy, and I started having a lot of pain sitting. It was really painful. And I talked to my midwife about it, and she said, "Oh, that's probably hemorrhoids. Welcome to your third trimester." And I was mortified when she said that word. And I remember looking at her, I'm like, "I've never had this. Like, okay, I guess this is one more of the joys of being pregnant. That's so beautiful." So I didn't really worry about it. And I was like, okay, I'll have the baby and it'll go away. And I had my baby, and right before COVID lockdown. So I had my baby, and I had a really tough birth. I got a uterine infection. I had to have an emergency C-section, and I lost a lot of blood. And so I ended up being in the hospital for 5 days and on a lot of antibiotics. And then when I was discharged, I got another infection in my arm. So I was, I had to go back to the ER, and this is like the first week of COVID lockdown and everyone's paranoid. I had to leave my infant in my car and I'd get antibiotics. And so then they told me to keep my arm up. So I'm like at home nursing, one arm in the air, I'm on antibiotic pills for my arm. And I say the antibiotics only because I had all these digestive issues were still going on. And at this point I was like, oh, it must be because I'm on so many antibiotics, right?
Right.
Like, this is not like I'm just recovering from the birth. I'm like, okay, I've got all kinds of weird bowel habits, but right. Like, I just gave birth and I'm on all these meds. So, okay.
Yeah.
Then I like lost all the baby weight like that. And I was like, damn, like breastfeeding really works. It did not work the first time, but this time it really worked. If you get colon cancer, here are like the four big things, like anemia, which most doctors, that can be a source of so many things. So that doesn't really trigger anything. But then if you have pain and you have irregular bowel movements and unexplained like weight loss, you're like, check. Okay. At the time, I had no idea. So I'm at home, bubbled up, away from the world, in isolation. the expression like lying on the floor, dying. I was literally on the floor trying to nurse my baby. I'm in terrible pain. My husband was a healthcare worker, so he was allowed to work pretty early. So he was gone. And I'm at home with my kids. And about 9 weeks postpartum, I was like, okay, I am still in so much pain. It still really hurts to sit, and I'm having all these irregular bowel movements. And then at that point, not only was I having irregular bowel movements, but I started having like mucus in my bowels. So like, that's obviously not a good sign, right? So I reached out to my OB, and she was like, oh, this is not postpartum related at all. Like, this is, at this point, you need to go talk to a GI. Now, what I wish I had just gone straight to a GI. I thought I had to go to like my primary first and get a referral. So I went to my primary, which was where things went sideways.
Which, how would anyone know that? I mean, that's what anyone would do, is go. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I go to my primary and I first do a telehealth with her because it's COVID, right? And then she was sort of reluctant. She was like, well, I guess that, you know, you're having enough pain, we're going to do an exam. So I come in, and this is the part in the interview where I get to say rectal, because that's like my life now, is to be really is that people know me to talk about that, a word that like would have, I was so mortified to tell my husband I like wouldn't say that word. Okay. Aww. But I almost died because I was too embarrassed to talk about poop and say that, so now we're just at a new phase.
Hey, this, so is, I go in, you can save lives, you gotta do it.
Right So I go in to have a rectal exam, which is awesome. She can't feel anything. So first of all, she shouldn't have been doing those exams, because I actually had like a massive, like the highest size stage tumor right there, right in my rectum. Wow. So she then did an x-ray, didn't see anything, and she's like, you know what, you just had all these, like, yeah, you just gave birth and you had all these drugs, just go home and, like, you know, get some probiotics or something.
So, oh my god.
So I went home and it was still persisting, and I reached back out to her and she's like, okay, like, you know what, have you had like a full pelvic exam since you've given birth? And I was like, no, because it's COVID, everyone's doing everything telehealth. Like,
yeah,
even though I had like this traumatic birth, like nobody wanted me to come in person.
So she's like,
oh no, well, we'll do like the full pelvic exam. And I'm like, okay, great. Let's just do that. So she does all that, still doesn't feel the tumor. Then she's like, you know what, why don't we do an ultrasound? And I was like, okay. So then I go to have an ultrasound and I get in the room and it's like one of those intervaginal ultrasounds, like wands. Mm-hmm. And they're like feeling around and checking everything. And they're like, oh, your uterus is good, like ovaries, like, and I like look at the tech and I'm like, how is this ordered? Because it's not my vagina that's hurting, it's my rectum.
Oh my god.
And I was like, I don't want you to put the wand up my butt, but like, can you like make sure that you're checking that area? Like, again, yeah, like this is not like ordered correctly, I don't think. So,
oh my god.
I go back and then I'm like, reach out to my doctor again. And this time, like, by this point, like, I've tried all kinds of things. Like, I was like, maybe I just need to exercise. Maybe it's,
oh my god,
stress. Like, my father had passed away recently before all this started. And then my aunt passed away in March. And so, like, they're like, maybe there's a lot of stress. I'm like, okay, well, we'll try all this other.
Wow.
And, you know, exercise did help a little bit with the stress. So, I think it. My doctor, she's like, how are you doing? And I was like, well, I guess a little better. And she's like, oh, well, if you're at all a little better, we can't do an MRI. And I'm like, well, but I'm still in so much pain.
Yeah.
So then I tell her, I'm like, okay, I'm taking ibuprofen, like 600 milligrams around the clock. Like, I haven't stopped taking the pain meds from when I gave birth, like that schedule.
Wow.
And I'm like, I'm in tears standing. I'm in tears trying to walk.
Oh my god.
I can't sleep at night. I have like this mucus in my stool. It's really concerning me. Like, do you think we should revisit the MRI and just rule some stuff out?
Mm-hmm.
And she literally wrote me back and said, I think you need to go to a therapist and I'm going to put in a prescription for Cymbalta. So
I'm just speechless about this.
Right. So then I go to a postpartum therapist and she's like, why are you here? And I'm like, well, my butt really hurts and I have mucus in my poop. And she's like, yeah, that's not what I really deal with.
It's not what I like,
and I was like, yeah, I don't really know why I'm here, but I was told to come to you. And she's like, I can't help you. And I was like, okay. So I go back and I talk to one of my, I have this old childhood friend who's a doctor and she's not an oncologist. This isn't her area, but I talked to her about this whole thing and she said, you know what? I think you should get the MRI and you need to go to get a colonoscopy, because she said each of those tests can show different things. And I was like, okay. So I go back and I ask for that. And at this point, my primary was on leave. So a different person like responds to me and they're like, you know, we need to get caught up on your case. So you need to come back in and see this person that's covering, and we'll talk about things. In the meantime, we'll, you know, I guess we'll put in a referral for a GI, but, you know, like kind of they put in the low priority referral. So it's like, you're going to take like, I think it was 6 to 8 weeks or something till I got an appointment. Anyway, so that appointment's kind of out there, right? And then I go in. So in the meantime, I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? I said, well, maybe I'll go contact my naturopath. My naturopath can order an MRI. So my naturopath ordered the MRI of my pelvis.
Oh my God.
And the thing is, naturopaths, like, that's not their wheelhouse. Like, yes, they can order MRIs, but like, oncology isn't their wheelhouse. Like, that's a point where they kind of pass things off and they might do some supplemental stuff, but you know.
Right.
So she ordered it, and right before I was supposed to have that on a Friday, and I go in on like Wednesday to see this other primary doctor. He does a rectal exam, does not feel the tumor. So that's two primary doctors that couldn't feel it. And we're talking about something about the size of, like, you know, close to a golf ball or something. Not like a little like dinky thing.
Yeah.
I tell him, I'm like, you know, I'm going to have this MRI. Can you check that it's ordered correctly? Like, I don't know the right way for the pelvis. So I go to my MRI, and my MRI comes back clean. There's no problems. No problems. Okay. The MRI wasn't ordered with the right contrast. So my naturopath didn't put it in with the right contrast, because she wasn't aware. And when I asked the primary, they didn't follow up. He's like, you don't really need to go to the GI. He's like, I think this is nerve damage from your birth. And again, I'm like, when you give birth, does your bottom really get damaged? Because, you know, this is not my vagina that's hurting. I want to go back to this again.
Right.
I was like, you know what? I'm still going to go to the GI. And so I went to him, and he was like, we're just going to do a colonoscopy. And he was like, I think you probably have like maybe some colitis or Crohn's, you know, something not fun. But like cancer was like not on my radar at all. Right.
So at this point, when he finally says, okay, we're going to do a colonoscopy, how many weeks have gone by since you gave birth?
Months? So it's 5 months have gone by since I've given birth by the time I have the colonoscopy.
So you had these symptoms for 5 months at least.
Well, I first started having pain in my third trimester. So it was really 8 months of pain, but
8 months,
you know, the midwife was the one that taking care of me. So, so then I woke up from the colonoscopy and was told I have a very large tumor, and they're almost 100% certain it's cancer, and they're sending it for biopsy.
Wow.
And the biopsy came back positive, and they were like, you need to go and have an MRI. So then an MRI ordered correctly, and a CT scan, and that came back with metastases to my liver. And I went just very quickly from thinking I didn't have cancer to being like, I have stage 4 cancer now.
Wow.
That was a lot of information. Did I talk too much?
I did. Thank you so much. This is such an important journey that you went on that you can share with other people, because it is an example of the failure of the medical system and how they just kind of passed you along and told you, tried to convince you, you should just take different probiotics or antibiotics or exercise more, or, you know, they had you almost believing that this was all in your head. And in fact, it was stage 4 cancer. So you knew 100% that what you were feeling was not right, and that it was not just in your head. And can you just talk a little bit about what kept you going and kept you persisting on that path? Because it's really hard when professionals in a certain field, for example, in the medical field, are telling you, oh, it's not that, or, oh, we don't see anything, or, you know, you're just overreacting or that kind of thing. So what helped keep you persisting on that?
I mean, I think one thing I have going for myself is I'm just by nature sort of that person that will that is sort of persistent and maybe difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I was in so much pain. I mean, I was in tears every day. I couldn't sleep on my back. I was in pain. I couldn't sit. Mm-hmm. I couldn't walk. And I kept being like, this isn't right. Like this, I can't be this debilitating in my, you know, in my head. It can't be just something related to the birth at this point. Like this isn't, and even if it is related to the birth, then there needs to be some solution because this isn't normal to have a second kid walk again, right? Like that's not the normal situation. So, you know, I just, you know, and the other thing that really helped me a lot isn't just like sort of that my nature, but I have a very supportive husband who, you know, he also he's a chiropractor. So he's like by training, like very interested in like trying to do like wellness or, you know, preventive health. And so, you know, he's like, this is crazy. Like, this is not normal. Like he said, we have to find solutions. So he kept looking and trying to help me think of alternatives or things we could look into because, you know, he wasn't going to sit back and just accept that this was the new state of life. So
and watch you suffer.
Yes. So,
oh my gosh. Well,
but you have to know your own body too, right? I mean, I didn't, I wasn't somebody who was ever in chronic pain before. I wasn't somebody who took prescriptions, you know, any regular prescriptions or medications. I was really in really good health going into the pregnancy. I was jogging vegetables and had a normal weight and, you know, so this was so different. So again, if you know your body and then you think this is your body is reacting in some way that really doesn't make sense for you. Mm-hmm. And I did have this point where like I had this fear in my mind that like I was going to die. I didn't really verbalize it because I just had this panic and I was like, maybe it's all the stress of going through all this in isolation, you know, it's just at home with the kids. And but I later learned that that is something the body will do when you're faced with something really your body will give you this sort of gut terrible feeling that something really like of impending doom, and that is typical of people that are facing a severe illness.
Oh wow. Yeah, well, it's just shows you like always trust your body. The saying is trust your gut, but you know, that's your body telling you, you know, something's wrong, and you listen to that, and that literally saved your life. So that's, you know, good for you because you had a whole group of medical people telling you that wasn't the case. So, I mean, and it just shows you how incredibly strong you are because giving birth is hard enough. So you're like, you not only did that, you also fought cancer and already had another child at the same time. And it's just incredible what you were able to overcome.
Well, you can understand because you're a mom. Like moms have to summon this deep strength to get through pregnancy or becoming pregnant for some people, the pregnancy, the birth, getting through, you know, being a parent and how labor intensive it is. And honestly, going through cancer treatment, having gone through, you know, two pregnancies and two difficult births, really reset what I consider, you know, tough physically. You know, when I went through chemo, I was reaching out to friends that were pregnant. I'm like, oh my God, are you okay? I know you're pregnant and it's your first trimester. And they're like, you're going through chemotherapy. And I'm like, yeah, but I get to have drugs
And I have weeks off to take a break and just feel okay. You just have nausea all the time and you have to hide it from your boss because you don't want your job to go away. So you have to pretend like everything's okay. I was like, people are sending me food and giving me gifts. Like, you have to just hide it and bear through the whole thing. So yeah, it's really tough, you know?
It is really tough. It is. So can you share, so how old were you when you got diagnosed with colon cancer?
I was 38 when, and I'm 40 now.
Okay. And because I know just from my own experience, most people can think of colon cancer and think, oh, I'll worry about that when I'm 50 or, you know, 50 and above. But I think your story is also very important because it shows that, you know, you could get it at a younger age and you need to be, you know, checking for that.
Yeah, I think when I got, I was floored and I was like, oh my goodness, I must be one of those rare, unfortunate souls that got something really out of the blue, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, colon cancer is the old man disease. Like, that's not right. That's not for like women in their 30s.
Young women, yeah.
But what I came to learn and, you know, by doing my own research and looking for support is, I started following several big nonprofits that, you know, one that does a lot of advocacy and one that does a lot of awareness. And both of them through, you know, their publications. And I started to learn that colorectal cancer is on the rise. And basically, I see some different statistics, but certainly if you were born in the, you know, the 80s, like myself, like you are at significant greater risk of getting this than people who were born in the 60s or 40s, like, you know, your grandparents and parents' generation. And what they're seeing now is that it's quickly becoming one of the leading causes of cancer-related death for young people. And by young people, I mean, you know, 20 to 40 year olds, that range. And so when I began to realize that, I think that's why I felt like being more vocal. Obviously we can't screen for every crazy thing under the sun, but given this is becoming enough of a problem and it is preventive through screening, I've felt very compelled just to be really open about my story and hope that other people know the symptoms and can push for help. But also, even before they have symptoms, just I want people to get screened. There's over-the-counter poop kits you can get at the pharmacy for like $13 or on Amazon. Your primary care can order a really pretty accurate stool kit that tests the DNA in your stool for cancer. And you know, a lot of times if your insurance won't pay for a colonoscopy because you're too young, your primary can order those stool kits for a few hundred.
That's really good to know. That's so important to know because I don't think anyone is really aware of that. I also realized that I forgot to ask your icebreaker question. So I'm just going to ask it now and then incorporate it in there. Okay. So is there anything you have Googled recently in the context of being a mom?
Yes. I like to buy Halloween costumes ridiculously early, partly because I'm type A and also because I think the joy of the costume needs to last more than Halloween. So my children wear their costumes like the whole month of October at home.
Nice.
So we get our money's worth. And
I like this.
Thanks to Wildcrafts, my son is coming up with all of these costumes that are very obscure animals. So I was trying to find a Komodo dragon costume, which I could not. And then he told me that as a backup, he would be okay being a fire salamander, which I also couldn't find. So that's
like,
my
can't
most
you just
recent...
be a bunny or something like
I know I was like, can't we just go to like, you know, Spider-Man or something, because there's lots of options there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay, that's a good one. Okay, so I wanted to ask, what's something you wish you had known to your former self, I guess, before all this really kind of picked up and started to go south?
I guess I wish that, I mean, timing of COVID was rough, but I wish I wish I had asked for, I mean, my midwife didn't even do an exam when she thought it was hemorrhoids. Like, I wish I had really pushed more for an exam earlier on. And, you know, I don't know what to say about my primary. I had intentionally, I had found her because she, I had really liked one of her colleagues that she went to medical school with that had been our previous primary. And I thought, because she's a woman, she's going to listen to me more as a doctor and I won't be a victim of what, you know, I know women are often, you know, face medical gaslighting, and I intentionally chose this female primary thinking that I wouldn't be that victim. So I guess that I just would have, I wish I had pushed more for a physical exam earlier on. And I also just think that I initially was so squeamish about talking about it. I didn't even tell my husband, honestly. I sent private my chart messages to my doctor and didn't share with him because I was mortified. You know, it's alive. You don't want to say, honey, there's like mucus in my poop. Can we talk about this? But then he was so mad when he found this out. He said, oh my goodness. He said, you almost died. And he said, you know, he's like, I love you. He's like, don't hide things like this for me. Like, he's like, if you're really concerned about your health, like, you know, no matter what is going on with your body, if you're concerned, you definitely need to like call in whoever your village or your support, you know, if you've got a husband or whatever you have, and then have them help advocate for you, you know, and don't just sit back and say, oh, it's nothing, you know, just cause you're young, or, oh, it's nothing cause you just had a baby. You know,
yeah, that's really good. And I'm, of course, I'm only asking that because it might help someone going through something else or the same thing, you know, so that that little voice that's in their head that is saying, this isn't right, you know, or I don't think what the doctor's saying is accurate, that maybe that would help them, you know, actually push more and it might make a difference. You know,
I mean, if anything, I think you have to be even more vocal when you're pregnant, because the default will say that anything you're experiencing is related to the pregnancy, right? Like, that's the default. And sadly, I've come to meet other young new parents that also had the pregnancy mask colon cancer. And I've had people share a lot of sad stories since that article came out of similar circumstances. One extreme story was in Australia, a nurse told me that they institutionalized this pregnant woman.
Oh my God.
And she ended up dying after giving birth of colon cancer.
Wow.
That's obviously a very extreme case, but I think if you feel like something's not right, do not just let them say, you know, oh, well, you're nursing, you're pregnant, you know, or you're trying IVF, and you know, whatever they're going to say is the excuse, you know, you're a woman, you're hormonal, it's in your head. You just have to be extra vocal. And if that means you have to call in somebody to stand by your side and help push and be in the room with you, like, you know, then do it. Because it is a problem for women.
It is. And it's shocking that it's 2022 and we have such incredible advancements in technology and medicine. And a woman died from that case you just mentioned, and it's just unimaginable, but it's happening and no one really hears about it.
I mean, I'm not, I definitely have sort of a sad moms group around the country, and I've met other moms like myself that, you know, I had to stop breastfeeding because I had to go on chemotherapy, and you know, it's just a lot. Yeah, I think people just don't realize. Anyways, yeah, you just you know if whatever's going on, if you don't feel like you're being listened to, you need to bring in an advocate with you and really push.
Yeah,
and find a bossy person to come with you if you don't think you're going to be listened. If you think a man's going to be listened more, then bring a man with you, whatever it takes.
Like, whatever it is.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And where are you now in your kind of, you mentioned that you went through chemo. Where are you now in the process?
Yeah, I've had a lot of chemo. I had my primary tumor removed. Okay. In April of 2021, and that was really rough. So to remove it, they kind of had to scoop out my whole pelvis. So I actually lost my rectum, my perineum, and 2/3 of my vagina. So sexual function is another thing that's been impacted, and I have a permanent colostomy, which means I go to the bathroom now in a bag. And that surgery was, oh gosh, it was an 18-hour surgery. That was really a lot. So since then, I've also had just a lot of chemo and one liver surgery, because my primary tumor is gone, but I still have cancer in my liver. And at this time, I'm waiting for the cancer in my liver, you know, for some of the cells to get big enough. So there'll be a few little tumors they can remove.
Okay.
So yeah, right now I've actually had like a long break off of treatment, which which has been really nice, because they expected me to go off chemo and then 2 months later the tumors would be big and they would operate them, and they weren't. And then they scanned again in August and then they still weren't. So I'm just been treading water right now.
Okay. Well, I wish you the absolute best. I hope that that continues as long as possible then.
Yeah.
And what is something that, you know, in your darkest, hardest times, which I'm sure you had several of those during this process, what's something, or maybe it was multiple things, that kept you going or kept you hanging on through this process?
I mean, of course it's your kids. Like, that's the hardest part of this whole thing is, when I was diagnosed, I had people tell me, like, oh, don't worry, we'll take care of your kids if you die. And I'm like, I'm not worried that my kids won't be surrounded by love, or, you know, that they're not going to have food or clothes. But there's no one that's going to raise them the way, exact same way that I would. And I lost my mother when I was 30, and a mother is a unique relationship in every human's life. And whether or not, even if you didn't have a good relationship with your mother, it's still one of those things that when you lose your mother, it hits people. And I think that's what was always the hardest part. It's still the hardest part for me, is to think, I know that losing that relationship is just tough, no matter how much other love you're surrounded by.
Yeah.
But I think that also just made me more, all the more willing to just keep going. I mean, I had nights where, I got up and changed diapers and did bottles in the middle of the night while I had chemotherapy pumping into my body. I had to put the pump on my back.
Never complaining again.
Yeah, because I mean, but you do it because you're like, I'm not leaving this little, my baby was 5 months old when I was diagnosed and started chemotherapy. And you're just like, I will do, you know, when you're a mama bear, you're like, I will do anything I can. Yeah. To take care of my kids. Like, so,
it's amazing.
that's just what moms do.
I
hate to like rip on dads, but you know, they're just not as strong as us, so
no, they're like, I have a cold.
Yeah. I don't gone. Like, I mean, my husband's, like, my husband's an exceptional awesome dad and husband, I should say that, but you know, sometimes he gets food poisoning and I'm not sympathetic. I'm like, oh yeah, that must be rough. This is gonna last 24 hours.
Yeah. Tell me more.
Do you have a baby screaming at you the whole time while that's happening too? Like,
did you birth a baby too?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, I'm just in awe of your strength, and I think it's so inspiring. And then how has this, you know, diagnosis and this journey changed how you spend your time and how you operate as a mom? Because once you become a mom, it changes everything as it is. And you know, your time is super limited and you have to really do time management and all these things. But how has this impacted that even further?
Yeah, I think honestly, I feel like I'm a better mom now because I think I used to just be frazzled a lot. After my first son was born, I was the primary breadwinner and I was in finance and it was stressful. And then with my second pregnancy, my dad had died. And so I was teaching, but also had, you know, like, I was just always frazzled. I was like, I have to do this. I have to do that. I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I really just, when I'm with my kids, I'm not perfect, but I really try to just push up anything else. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
No, this is what matters. And I can't be sitting here frazzled about all this other stuff. And I just feel like I'm more present. That's kind of like a buzzword, but I definitely try to, like,
yeah, you
know, be more present, be more just like, this is, I don't know what the future is gonna bring, and I'm just going to just enjoy this moment and whatever it is, and I'm not going to sit here and, you know, let other things in life interfere with that, because this is special. This time with them is special. And you know, whenever I have treatment breaks, mm-hmm. I haven't been working, so that's been a huge gift, because mm-hmm. like Friday my son hadn't started kindergarten and we didn't have childcare, so I just was like, okay, I'm not working and I feel good, what should we do? And so we spent the whole day doing, like, he wanted to go to the beach, he wanted to go to the candy store, he wanted to go to a park, but we just spent the whole day doing what he wanted to do as sort of a last day of summer. And I wouldn't, you know, before I would have been working, I wouldn't have had that time. But
yeah,
you know, now, you know, whenever you feel well and you have those moments with your kids, I just savor them. So not that I don't get frustrated with them, but it's definitely a much different, like, focus for sure. So
yeah, that's, I think we all need to always keep those things in mind. It's easy to forget or be on your phone or be in a meeting or whatever, but yeah, that's really nice. And do you have any words of wisdom or messages for young moms and young women from your experience?
I mean, my biggest thing is I just want people to go get screened. Insurance will typically start at 45 unless you have family history, you know, strong family history. But mm-hmm. talk to your primary doctor, even if you have a bad one, see if they'll do the stool DNA test kit for you. And if not, go on Amazon. You can order a stool cancer screening kit for $10. It's like, yeah, I don't know, I think I saw somewhere like 78% effective, whatever it is. It's not 100%, but you know, mm-hmm. if it comes back positive, then you can go back to your doctor and be like, okay, I need to go get a colonoscopy now. Now it's justified for insurance to order it because this kit showed that there's maybe something there. Mm-hmm. This is, colon cancer is very treatable if it's caught early. It's very easy to treat in stage one and stage two, and it's preventable. So save mm-hmm. yourself a lot of grief, and mm-hmm. I would just make that part of your annual health screening. Just add it on there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, thank you so much for your time and sharing your story. I know it can't be easy to, you know, talk about some of these things, but I'm sure that it will help someone in the future that hears this, whether it's directly related to colon cancer or something else. I think your message is super important. So is there any organizations that you're involved with now, or ways that people can get involved with raising awareness, or things that you would like to share, or where people can follow on social media, things like that?
Yeah, so I have an Instagram page. It has a really fun name, Booty Cancer Mom.
Booty Cancer Mom, I love it.
and I try to do advocacy and awareness on there, and I also document just my health journey. For anyone else that's interested, there's two sort of great organizations. One is Fight Colorectal Cancer. They do a lot of advocacy works. They did a great installation outside of Washington, D.C. this year to show how many people, young people, are going to predicted to be diagnosed, and filled the whole mall with little blue flags for how many people are predicted in the next few years. The other one is the Colorectal Cancer Alliance. They do a lot of patient support and education. So kind of two different organizations, one if that's more advocacy and one that's more sort of, you know, sort of patient supported awareness. But they're both excellent. Yeah.
Great. Great. We'll definitely post those when we post the episode. So, well, thank you so much. I am just in awe of how strong you are, and I will never complain again about getting up in the middle of the night to feed my baby.
Oh, you can still complain? My friends are like, oh, I can't complain. I'm like, no, you still get to complain. That's okay. No, I might be able to complain too, but we, you know.
Oh, you
no,
definitely
don't, can. Don't take that away from yourself. Do what you've got to do. So especially, you said you have a 4-month-old?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you still on leave, or what are you doing right now?
No, I'm back to work. So we're doing that fun game. But he's doing great though, and he is thriving and loving life and doesn't notice when I'm gone. You know, he's not old enough yet to he loves daycare because he has no idea the difference really between me or daycare. So that's been a nice transition actually. So
I'm more worried about you than the baby, not to sound hard.
Oh, no, yeah.
I was more
you're
in the fifth trimester, and you're doing this podcast, you know, I'm sure the baby, you know, even when people are like, oh, no, the baby's doing great. I'm like, yeah, but they're probably still waking you up at least once a night and, you know, running ragged and, yeah.
At least twice a night.
Yeah, right? So you're like, everything's fine with the baby, except for my lack of sleep and being expected to function.
I was like, the baby's thriving.
Yeah, I know. I know that answer. I've been there. I know it. So, all right. You hang in there. Take care.
Oh, yeah.
Yourself. Thanks for having me. All right.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Perfect. Bye.